Hi, Boker Tov, good morning. So today we actually do some readings. Last time was sort of a setup. I guess the real issue that we discussed yesterday was the challenge of metaphor, which is that it's sometimes hard to see the referent behind the metaphor. And in the case of Shir HaShirim, there's nothing explicit in Shir HaShirim to indicate that there is a reference behind the metaphor. But I think having established, I think we also spoke just a little bit, I gave you some hints in Shir HaShirim, we saw a few psukim which hinted at their holiness. Mizot olam in abidbar, kitimrot ashan, mekuteret mor levanam ikolav kat rochel, are words that come right out of sacrificial verses. And there are other psukim like Har Hamor, short for Har Hamoriah. In fact, I was just singing a shir on Shabbat, and there's one that says Har Hamor. So I obviously wasn't the first person to notice that. What's the song that has Har Hamor? I'm trying to think of which song I sang. And there's a verse, Har Hamor. But I can't remember. It's one of the Shabbat Day songs. I was singing it. You ever notice when you think about something, and then after you sort of learn something new, you start seeing it everywhere? So that happened yesterday. And there are other pieces of holiness. Good morning. There are other pieces of holiness in the book, but there's no proof. There's no proof. However, I'd like to demonstrate another situation where you kind of have to be, good morning, where you have to kind of be attuned towards the metaphor behind the religious writing. You have to have a certain amount of faith that if a book is in Tanakh, which is essentially what Ibn Ezra was asking us to do, it would not have been in Tanakh had it not been holy. But I can't immediately see the holiness. So it requires a little leap of faith. But once that leap of faith is made, then the metaphor starts and one could really reveal the metaphor. And what I'd like to show is just start doing some readings first from Mishlei to show where missing the metaphor could actually be quite dangerous, or at least lose its real flavor of how special the book is. And then we'll spend time just doing some readings in Shir HaShirim and try to see, try to get some sense of the idea of love that is being expressed there. So I start on this page, which has two columns, and I just want to read a little bit for Shir HaShirim, maybe just sort of get in the mood. There should be a... Yeah. Are there enough? I have a few extra if you need. Oh, there's a bunch there. Okay. Iti milvanon kala, iti milvanon tavoi. Come with me, my bride. Come with me from the Lebanon. Tashuri merosh amana. Tashur means to see things from the head of amana, which is assumption is it's some mountain called amana. Merosh Sneer v'Chermon, from the top of the mountains of Sneer and Chermon. Sneer, by the way, is in modern Israel, it's a river. The Sneer River is the river that comes down off the Chermon. Mima'onot arayot meharei nemerim, from the dwelling places of lions, from the dens of lions, and from the mountains covered in leopards. Libavtini achoti kala, libavtini b'achat me'enayach b'achat anach mitzavrotayach. Libavtini is a very nice word, by the way. It's called a privative. It's a privative. Its form is PL. I won't spend too much time on grammar because I don't want anybody to fall asleep. But I just want to show that if you have your grammar down, you can see some nice things. It's like lisharesh as opposed to lahashrish. Lisharesh is the PL. It's a privative. It doesn't mean to put in roots. It means to take out roots. Lisharesh. In English, you have something like that also. When you shell a nut, you do not put the shell on, you take the shell off. What's that? You de-shell it, but you don't say that, you just say it's a shell. So the sharesh means to take out the roots. The hashrish and the hifil means to put in the roots. So libavtini is a privative piyah, which means you've stolen my heart. And that's how to translate that. That is, you've taken away my heart, which is a real nice translation. If you know your biblical grammar well, it sort of jumps out at you. Libavtini achoti chala, libavtini b'achat me'enayich. You've stolen me with even one of your eyes, which means just by looking at me, you've taken my breath away. You've made me love you. B'achat anach mitzabronayich, with one of the jewels around your neck. Mayafudo dayich achoti chala. How fair are your breasts, my sister, my bride. Kitovu dodayich. Wait, am I? Matovu dodayach miayin. You know what? I think I may be translating that wrong. You know, let me back off. Let me not go with that. Let me go with love, because I think that's a fair translation. How wonderful, how beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. Matovu dodayach miyayin, your love is greater than wine. Vireach shmanayach, and the smell of you mikol b'samim is better than all spices. Nofet titofna siftotayach kala, your lips drip with nofet, with a spice. Dvash v'chalav tachat l'shonech, honey and milk I find under yours, is under your tongue. V'ruach samotayach, v'reach samotayach, and the smell of your gown, of your clothes, kireach levanon, is like the smell of Lebanon. So the reason why I selected this source is, first of all, it's provocative, although it's far and away. And dodayach, I think, should definitely be translated love here and not breast, although we'll get into the issue of a more explicit language that exists in Shir HaShirim, and certainly there are direct references to a woman's body that we'll get into a little bit. But before we do that, the reasons why I wanted to express this is first to show you this. It was without question a very, very sensual idea here. It's a very, very sensual idea. That your lips drip with honey, essentially. Your lips drip with spices, and there's honey under your tongue. It's a very, very. It's very sensual. I'd like to mention. It's not my sheet on Shir HaShirim, but it's worth mentioning. There's a rabbi doctor who teaches in Bar Ilan. His name is Gadi Cohen, Dr. Gadi Cohen. He is one of the greats. If you open up the Dot Mikra, are you familiar with the Dot Mikra text? Those are the pink texts. I don't know why they chose that bright pink color for Tanakh, but there are these bright pink texts, which are essentially a modern Hebrew translation of Tanakh. Excellent. If your modern Hebrew is very good, you'll probably not find a better Perush on all of Tanakh, although they have different authors for each book, and some are better than others. Gadi Cohen is the one who wrote the introduction to, if you open up and you take a look at Megillat Esther, he wrote the introduction. He just came out with a book on all the Megillot. So his Shita is like this, and because it's not my Shita, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it deserves some time because, first of all, he may be right, and second of all, it's beautiful what he says. It says the problem with love, it's the Shir HaShirim. If you take a look through Shir HaShirim, it's all about Eretz Yisrael. You mention all kinds of things. The explicit mentions are about Eretz Yisrael. Your eyes are like the waters of Cheshbon. Now Cheshbon is an Israeli city conquered by Israel. It was on the other side of the Jordan River, but at least part of the time it was an Israeli city. Yafa'at Rayati kitzirtsa, you are beautiful as tirtsa, navak Yerushalayim, you are as pleasant as Jerusalem. And here we have references to the Lebanon, to the sneer, and what you do is you walk through the passages of Shir HaShirim, you're walking through Eretz Yisrael, top to bottom. Really, there's very little left uncovered. This is where I'm a little uncomfortable with his, this is the reason why I can't wholeheartedly embrace his idea, because six of the seven special fruits of Israel, the minim, the Shiva minim of Israel, are in Shir HaShirim, and she is compared to them, or parts of her body is compared to them, except for Sorim. So Professor Cohen says that the reason why Sorim are not there is because Sorim actually is an animal feed, and therefore it wouldn't be all that sensual, all that complimentary to compare any of her to Sorim. But her stomach, if you would, and if you have your Shir HaShirim, it probably pays to open it up at this point. If you have the Art Scroll English won't help you. If you don't, if you have this one, it's on page 325, Shir HaShirim. And if you have the Art Scroll, it's, I think, page 1,200 and something. What's that? 1,263. So if you look at chapter 6, I believe, and if you open up to page 1,267, I think, on verse 4 is where the chapter starts. And this is the second time, actually, we're hearing this, what's called a wasaf, which is an Arabic term which describes when a woman's body is compared, or even a man's body is compared piece to piece to some other metaphorized, beautiful idea. So on verse 4, by the way, the chapter starts on verse 4. The chaptering system, of course, is a Christian chaptering system. We did not create the chaptering system. And therefore, you have to be careful when chapters actually begin. In Shir HaShirim, there are quite many more mistakes than one finds in the rest of Torah, probably because Shir HaShirim is a more difficult text. And the Christian who did it, Stephen Langton, probably had a harder time. But in verse 4, Yafa'at Ra'iti Kitzirtzah, you're as beautiful as Tirtzah. Tirtzah is a city that Shlomo built, which, by the way, speaks to the dating of the book. Because if the book was dated after Tirzah was destroyed, which was relatively early during the first temple periods, it would be hard to make such a comparison. So when you have a comparison like this, you were as beautiful as Tirzah, and Tirzah was destroyed in the middle of the first temple, then you have something which essentially gives you dating. Now, it's possible you could always argue that the author was trying to make it look like an ancient book. But to my mind, this is one of these things which indicates the ancientness of the book and the authenticity of Shlomo writing this. Navak Yushalayim ayuma kanidgalot. Nidgalot is a difficult term, but it's probably you are as fearful as nidgalot. In this case, probably from the word degel, you are as fearful as an army host with all of its flags and standards. Hasebi enayich minegdi, turn your eyes away from me. Shehem hir hivuni, because they've shaken me up. Sarech ke'eder ha'izim shegalshu min ha'gilad, that have come down from the Gilad, which of course the beautiful mountains of what we call today the Golan Heights. Shinayich ke'eder ha'achlim shalum ha'arasa shklam atinov shklam be'en bahem. But if you continue on, so we have kefelach harimon rakatech, like a slice of pomegranate is your forehead, this area here. Now the question is, so what Professor Cohen wants to argue is, why take a pomegranate? I don't know if that's it's red and smooth, so maybe you could say that she had a nice glow to her, but these are the Shiva Minim, which come up over and over again, or at least six of them come up over and over again in the book. And here I'd like to take you to something else, which seems a little bit strange. If you take a look at verse 5 in chapter 7, which is at the bottom of the same page, if you're in the art school, 1267. If you're in the other one, I'm not sure. I don't have it open, but it's chapter 7, verse 5. Oh no, verse 3 is better. Verse 3. Sharech hagan asar, your belly button. That's what a sharech is, not sharech, but sharech. Your belly button is like a pool of the moon. Sahar was actually a name for the moon. It's an Aramaic term for the moon. Al yachsar hamazik, which never runs out of juice. Bitnech areimat chitim suga b'shoshanim. Your stomach is like a pile of wheat, which is surrounded by lilies. And again, you get into the situation. What kind of compliment is that? Right. Well, your stomach is like a pile of wheat. I mean, where's the compliment there? So you could argue that the first argument that one could make is that women back in those days, that beauty was considered plumpness, like it was during the classic painting time of Titian and all the painters. So they liked the women heavy because it indicated healthiness. Skinniness was not a thing of beauty during Europe in the 15th, 1600s. It was considered a thing of starvation. If you had money, you had a nice double chin and a heavy stomach. The only problem is that doesn't work for the ancient Near East. How do we know that? Because we have paintings from Egyptian... We have paintings from Egyptian and Sumerian and Akkadian chiseling on the wall or paintings of their women. And actually, they were quite thin. Back then, you would not want to argue that heaviness was a thing of beauty. In fact, probably thinness, much like it is today, was considered a thing of beauty. And at least that's how they painted their women. Perhaps not to the point that we've gotten today with the starving models. But you couldn't argue here. It would be hard to argue to say that back in ancient Near East that heaviness was a thing of beauty. But what is a thing of beauty is pregnancy. What is the thing of is beauty is pregnancy. And her pregnancy is considered an aremat chitim, which is a pregnancy of the land. That is, when one looks at the metaphor here, if the metaphor is there, that is just to say that he's complimenting the woman is a little difficult. But if the metaphor is the beauty of the body is when it is ripe with fruit, and the chitim, the the wheat is growing and spreading. I don't think they're talking about a six-pack here of the stomach. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about overflowing fields, which is surrounded by lilies. And this is what Dr. Cohen says, and then I'll sort of go back to where, I guess, my view of Shir HaShirim, is that the problem with the love between God and man, God and the Jewish people, is that it cannot be actualized. It's the paradox of Judaism. We believe at one hand that we are intimate with God, and on the other hand, God is Ein Sof. I don't mean to be overly Kabbalistic, but God is infinite and unattainable. How do you have a love relationship with somebody that you can't feel and touch? And as you know, other religions which come from Judaism have solved this problem. If I can only give a physical form to God, I could somehow touch it and feel it and kiss it and hug it. And what Dr. Cohen liked to say is that the sexual terminology in Shir HaShirim, as well as in many other places, Verastich li be'emunah, Verastich li be'tzedek u'mishpat v'chesed v'rachamim, is that Eretz Yisrael becomes a place where, he didn't say it like this, I'm going to say it because I'm perhaps a little more provocative, is a place where the Jewish people and God make love. That is, in order to get your minds around the idea of loving God, you need some kind of physicality, because that's how we're built. And yet we can't be physical with God, so all of these imageries in Shir HaShirim become a way of touching the Godhead, so to speak, of coming close to God. So when I look at the, when I eat the wheat, when I walk into a Shofar in Israel and I buy wheat, or when I'm a farmer and I cut down and I see that things are growing, that's a place where I could literally touch God, and that's being metaphorized into the idea of a physical relationship between man and woman, with Eretz Yisrael being the center of that. It's not perfect, because there are not the shivamim, there are only the sheshminim, and there are also all kinds of other spices that are mentioned. It's hard to say that if there were only the shivamim mentioned in Shir HaShirim and no other spices and no other fruits or flowers, so I would be, that would be a better, but there's also tapuach, and tapuach is not one of the shivamim, it's not. So I can't say that I'm completely convinced by that what Dr. Cohen has said, but I think there's a certain element of truth to it. Of course, with metaphor supports multiple truths. Now I'd like to step away from Shir HaShirim a little bit and go into Mishle. And I want to show you something very interesting. If we could read the last verse, though, Shir HaShirim first. Nofet, back on the printed page. Nofet titofna. Wait, there's... do you want a sheet? Thank you. No, we'll be in the sheet for another 15-20 minutes at least, so you won't need your the Shir HaShirims. Nofet titofna sifteltayach kala, your lips drip with spices. Dvash v'chalav tacha l'shonech v'reach samotayach reach levanon. You have honey under your tongue. It's a very provocative, a very complimentary idea. Now what I'd like to do is read a little bit of Mishle. It's chapter 5. I'll read you little pieces of Mishle. Mishle is giving mussar, telling people how to live and how not to live. So in chapter 5 it says like this, B'ni l'chokhmati akshiva, listen to my wisdom, my son, l'tvunati, to my knowledge, hot oznecha, turn your ear. Lishmor mizimot v'dat tzvatecha yinsaru, watch over, be careful with good plans, that is, strategize well, and guard well knowledge. Kinofet titofna siftei zara, because the lips of a wanton woman, of a, not a harlot exactly, but a woman of indiscretion, of physical indiscretion, her lips drip. Do you see what's going on here? The same lashon, which is used as a compliment of the woman in Shir HaShirim, is an insult of the woman here, of the fact that she's too wanton. It's very interesting, right? V'chalak mishem en chika, and her mouth is smoother than oil. The end of her, whether it's because your involvement, the end of your involvement with her, or the end of her personally, is like wormwood, is like wood that rots away. Her lips are sharp like knives. Ragleha yordot mavet. Her legs drip with death, or death descends from her legs. Sha'old sa'adeha yitmochu, her steps support the grave or hell. Ora chayim pen tfales, they do not look where they're going. Na'u magladeha lo teda, the movements of her steps will not be known, will be destroyed. That's the metaphor. Or not. Because there's no indication that it's a metaphor. It seems to be a piece of advice about how not to get involved with the wrong type of woman. Don't go with a woman who is loose, because if you do, she'll take you down. That is a good piece of advice. I think it's a good piece of advice. And it's not the only time that advice shows up. Let's take a look in chapter Vav. Netzor b'ni mitzvat avicha, v'al titoshor torat emecha. Watch my commandments, guard my commandments, and do not leave off my instructions. Torat emecha means the instructions of your mother. Koshreim al libecha tamid, tie them onto your heart. Ondeim al gargrotecha, make them jewels around your neck. V'hita lecha tancha otach, otach. Essentially more advice about watching to be wisdom. Make sure you're wise. Kiner mitzvot v'torah or, you recognize this? Ner mitzvah v'torah or, v'derech chayim tochachot musar, because to do commandments is a candle, and the Torah or instructions is the light. V'derech chayim tochachot musar. We are, we're about halfway down on the right-hand side column. The first word is key. L'shmorcha me'eshet ra, because if you watch the Torah carefully, you'll stay away from the married woman who is evil. Michelkat lashon nochria, from the smoothness of the tongue of a foreign woman. Al tachmod yofya b'lavavecha, do not desire. Do you have the place? I could. Is it? Are you okay? Is everybody? If you don't have the place, just let me know and I'll help you get there. Al tachmod yofya b'lavavecha. See, I was talking about mitzvot all of a sudden, but I guess the mitzvot are don't sleep with women who aren't your wives, essentially. But here, al tachmo b'yafya b'lvavecha, do not admire her beauty. Va'al tikacha b'afafeha, and do not like her fluttering eyelashes. Ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lachem ve'eshet ish nefesh ikara tatsud. I think what that's saying, ki ba'ad isha zona, for the sake of a woman who is, again, not a harlot, but a woman who is loose, ad kikar lachem, until a piece of bread, the eshet ish nefesh ikara tatsud, a married woman hunts down the soul. I'm not sure what the bread reference is here. I apologize. I should have. What's that? Oh, for money. Ad kikar lachem. Oh, right. She takes that as she's willing to, for the sake of getting a little bit of bread. That's correct. Yes. Hayichate ish eish b'cheiko. It's very, by the way, the poetry is very beautiful. Hayichate ish eish b'cheiko. It's very, you get the sibilance of it. Can a man take hot coals into his own breast? Uvgadav lo tisarafna. And he's not going to burn his clothes, which means, you think he could get away with this kind of thing? You think he could, in modern days we would call that, you think he could play with fire? Ish yalech. If a man walks on coals, raglav lo tikavena, you think his your feet aren't going to get burned? Kain habal eshet reyehu. So is the man who comes to his who has a relationship, a physical relationship with his friend's wife or somebody else's wife. Lo yinake kol hanogei ba. He will not be, anybody who touches her will not be cleaned. Let's continue on and do a little more of this good advice of staying away from other people's wives. Benish mor amarai, this is in chapter 7. Benish mor amarai, umitzvatai titzponi tach. Watch my words, guard my secret, keep close my commandments. Shmor mitzvatai v'chiei. You want to live? Keep my commandments, v'torati ki ishon einecha. And let them be like the view of your eyes, like the fire of your eyes. Koshreim al etzba otecha. Wrap them around your fingers, kotveim aluach libecha, write them on the plaque of your heart, and mor lechochma achoti at umoda lebina tikra. Say to wisdom, you are my sister. Do you recognize sister from Shir Hashirim? Umoda lebina tikra, and say to wisdom that you are my relative. Lishmorcha meisha zara, to guard you against the foreign woman, minochria amareha chlika, and from the seductive, slippery words of the woman, of the foreign woman. So here, all of a sudden, the metaphor starts to, that is, what's balanced here, what's balanced against this negative woman is wisdom. So the question is, if you're reading this straight, if you read just these chapters, so except for that little bit at the end, it looks like Mishlei is giving you good advice about how not to start up the wrong woman. There's actually an excellent piece which I didn't photocopy here for the sake of time, which is how about when the husband comes home, you're in deep trouble. It's very funny. When the husband comes home and you think you're going to be able to buy your way out of your problem, he will not accept any of your money. It's very funny, actually, how modern it is, which just shows that the human psyche hasn't changed. So if you read these things, it looks, except for that last little bit, which I'm going to get back to, it just looks like good advice, which is what Mishlei very often gives about how not to start off with the wrong kind of woman. But now I want to take you to the first piece of Musar in Mishlei, and how that unlocks the key to everything we read on the right-hand side column. Because if you read the right-hand side column, it looks like a very, very explicit way on how to stay away. Yordot Mayim. It's a very sexy, very term. You sleep with her, her legs drip death. I mean, that's a very provocative image. But now let's take a look at the other side, and let's see what we have. Chochmot Bachutz Tarona. Barchovot titain kola. Now, how would you translate chokhmot? How would you translate it? Chokhmot.
Things of wisdom.
It's a strange word, isn't it? Normally, something that's wisdom, if it has a noun, wisdom as a noun would be chokhmah. Right? Chokhmah. And in fact, that word is used quite often. So if Shlomo HaMelech had used chokhmah, we wouldn't be able to know what he's talking about. What he's talking about here is he couldn't use the word chokhmah, so he had to add an extra letter on to super turn it into a noun or personify it. This is not wisdom. This is lady wisdom. It is like, do they have this? I don't know, in the United States, I don't know about Canada, but in the United States, outside of every court, they have Lady Justice. And in one hand, she has a sword, and the other hand, she has the scales. And she is a personification of wisdom. And now I'd like to read you what she says, because, what's that?
Justice.
Lady Justice. In the States. Yeah, but here it's Lady Wisdom. That's correct. I was just trying to give an example of where an abstract concept of justice is personified by a woman. Here, an abstract concept of chokhmah is personified by a woman called chokhmot. Why is that important? Because Shlomo HaMelech talking to you can tell you all about the importance of wisdom. But wisdom talking to you allows you to express things metaphorically that you cannot get when wisdom is not personified. Let me read it to you and you'll see what I mean. There's some things here that simply cannot be expressed as well as they could be expressed in personification. Chochmot b'chotz tarona, she sings, she cries out outside, which means she's not a private person. She goes out to make sure everybody could hear her. Barchovot titain kola. Rechovot in modern Hebrew means streets, but in biblical Hebrew it means a rechov is the wide area. As you walked in through the gates of a city, you had this wide area that where they sold things and where the justices sat. That was called a rechov from the word wide. It was essentially the town square. Birosh homiyat tikra. She screams over the noise of all of the clutter, all of the noise, the homiyah that's going on, the great, I'm not sure how to translate it, I'm sorry, my English is not good.
Tumult,
very nice. The tumult of this rechov, you know, the buy this, sell this, here, there, but her voice is so loud it can be heard. Now, the metaphor is beautiful. What's the referent? The referent is you might think that you can't hear her. I wasn't able to hear her. And what Shlomo HaMelech is doing here is by personifying this woman yelling on a loudspeaker among this public place, the image is that no matter where you are, you can hear the voice of Chochmah because she's really, really loud. But she's a woman. She'll speak for herself. It won't be Shlomo speaking. It'll be Chochmah speaking or Chochmot. Bipitchei Sharim Ba'ir Amareha Tomer. She says what she has to say at the very gates of the Sharim. Who was at the gates of the Sharim, by the way? There was justice, actually. That's where the court sat. An Matai P'taim Tahebu Peti. Until when, O you fools, will you love foolishness? This is not Shlomo talking. This is the woman talking. V'leitzim Latzon Chamdu Laem. And Leitzim in modern Hebrew means fools, but in ancient Hebrew was somebody who mocked other people's religion. You think things are new? They always had people who mock, oh, you're putting on tefillin, what are you, an idiot? You believe in this? What are you, a dummy? This is a very old idea. V'leitzim latzon chamdulam, she goes over to them. See, that's different, because you'll see that what she says later is, you can't get away with saying that I didn't come to you. I came to you. Uchsilim yisnu dat. And what time will fools hate knowledge? Tashuvu letochachti. Come back to my instruction, the woman says. Hinei abi alachem ruchi. I'll give you my whole spirit. Odia dvarayetchem. I will tell you my words. I will let you know my words. Yan karati v'tama'enu. But because I called you and you refused to listen, Natiti yadi vein makshiv, I stretched out my hand, but there was nobody paying attention. Vatifru kol atzatai, you heard all my vice and you traded it in, you exchanged it. Vatochachti lo avitem, and my instructions you did not accept. What? What's that? What did you want to say? Do you want to comment now? I'd be happy if you want to. Right.
And your rationality, everything else, it sort of seems to progress along that.
It's beautiful. See, I never would have done it that way, but that's the wonder of metaphor. I pictured this outside image where there was enough instruction being taught that everything is okay. What you're saying is that the Rechovot is the person, and the Petach Sharim, which we saw, by the way, last week, we saw the imagery in Kohelet, that the Petach was the mouth, and the Tochanot were the teeth. And now what you're saying is this is an internal image. That is, you think Chokhmah came to every single person. It was inside your head and it was audible over the noise. It's beautiful. And the great thing about metaphor is that not only can we both be right, but it may specifically mean why Shlomo left his metaphor. When I personify, when I give a personification to, when I metaphorize, I allow all kinds of understandings that were not able, if Shlomo would have said, hey, listen to my wisdom, because if you don't, you're going to get yours. And people say, whatever. But if there's a metaphor, it allows meanings to be expressed per individual. And it allows a recognition that was not available. Metaphor, by the way, and this is something I learned from one of my professors, Mordechai Cohen, who teaches in YU. Metaphor, and this is against the Rambam's idea. He calls a metaphor a milash shula. I take a word from one place, I apply it to another, and A equals B, and I have to translate A to B. But what he tried to show, there was a great parshan named Moshe Ibn Ezra, not Avram Ibn Ezra. He lived about 70 years before Moshe Ibn Ezra. And Moshe Ibn Ezra essentially saying is that what a metaphor is able to do is able to create images that regular words can't create. He gave an example of, clouds moving across the winds like horses. It doesn't just create the sense of speed. It starts to, you create a world which you cannot get by using literal language. You create senses that are not only multivalent, that mean multiple things, but make things that you couldn't even get your mind around without the metaphor. And that's what's happening here. Let me continue. I'm sorry, please, go ahead. From their own perspective. Exactly right. That's exactly right. Of course, the danger of the metaphor is that people will just see a good story and that's it. And in fact, if when I read Hey, Vav, and Zion on the right-hand side, you think Mishle is talking about inappropriate sexual relationship. But when we read this, it means so much more. I'll continue on. Gam ani be'edchem eschak. I will laugh. Now, it's even better. Because this is wisdom who has taken on a certain nastiness. Gamani be'etcham eschak. I will laugh at your fear. El ag, I will make fun of you. Bevo pachtechem, when the fear comes to you. She's talking to the people who do not accept her voice. Bevo kishoah pachtechem, because when your fear comes like desolation. Ve'etchem kisufa ye'eta, and your fear comes like the storm. Bevo alechem tzara v'tzuka, when pain, suffering, narrowness comes to you. Az yikra'uni, look at her make fun, by the way. Listen to this, it's beautiful Hebrew. Az yikra'unani velo e'eneh, yishacharunani velo yimtza'unani. Do you see the language? She's making fun of them. It's like, na 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 na. Do you see, it shouldn't be, you never find that lashon of yikra'uni, it's normally yikra'uni, yimtza'uni, yishacharuni. But here you get the double nun because she's teasing them. There's something about when you give a voice to Chachma, she's able to act like a person and behave like a person, and you get a certain sense of her nastiness. Not nastiness, but seriousness. That thing, Azikraunni Veloa Nas. So then when you call to me, because after you don't listen to my Chachma, and all the bad things that are guaranteed to happen to you come, then you'll call me Veloa Nas. And then it's too late. Yishacharunni, you'll pray to me Velo Yimtzaunni, but I'll be long gone. So powerful, the metaphor, in ways that there's no way that Shlomo HaMelech could have done it. If he had just said, by the way, if you don't listen to Chachma, these bad things are going to happen, and unfortunately, then it'll be too late. It's a nice message, but it's not like this. Yes?
Dr. Schroeder, who wrote The Big Bang, I sat in his class, and he defined God as wisdom. He did a whole formula, whatever. And now when you're talking, you're using a feminine attribute.
Right. I'm not sure. I didn't hear the lecture by Dr. Schroeder, so I can't say. The question is whether wisdom is part of God Himself, or whether it's. I'm not sure. I'm ready to make that connection that wisdom is part of God, that wisdom is somehow a wisdom, or following wisdom. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm ready to equate the two, God and wisdom. That wisdom is somehow God, or God is somehow wisdom. I think there's more to God than just that. Wisdom, I think, is simply and it could be that God's not wisdom at all, that wisdom comes from us in following the instructions of God, that is, are trying to get close to God, that that's wise, and are trying to get far away from God, that is unwise. I'm sorry, this may be beyond my ability to answer at this time. And I don't know whether Chachma is the idea of the feminine aspect of God, which of course is a very Kabbalistic idea, the Zer Anpim, it's a very and the idea of Shechina, but you get into some dangerous territories with that, as if there's, there are a lot of people that don't say the Yichud Shem Kudosh Baruch Hu, which means to combine the two aspects of God. So I tend to stay away from that. I don't think God has a masculine or a feminine, just ways that we understand Him. But if you'd like to say that wisdom, the question that you're asking is, why is wisdom, and it tends to be in the Torah, feminized. And the question is why? I don't have an answer. I think I'd have to spend a lot of time going through all the wisdom texts and see if there's something to it. Maybe in the ancient Near East it was always described as a feminine as well. But I'm not sure I'm ready to combine the idea of the feminine aspect of God. But I don't know. I'm not prepared to answer the question. It doesn't mean that you're not right. It just means I'm not prepared to answer the question. I'm sorry, was there another question on the... Let me finish up her speech, because it's nice, by the way. As you cry, I love that little na-na thing. I just love reading it over and over again. There's some psukim in the Torah which just, it's not just jump out at me, and this is one of them. Tachat ki sanu dat, because you hated wisdom. V'yirat adonai lo bacharu, you didn't choose in the fear of God. And by the way, here, it's fear of God, which is parallel to wisdom and knowledge. Not God Himself. Do you see how that's done? Tacha kisanu dat, you hated knowledge or wisdom. V'yirat Adonai lo bacharo. So wisdom not so much being God Himself, but our personal fear of God. And I think that's a better comparison. Although again, that's probably a separate discussion. I'd have to see what Dr. Shorter wrote and try to get a sense of what he wanted to say. Lo avu latzati, you did not take my advice or my wisdom. Na'atu kol tochachdi. Every little bit of what I taught you, you did not listen to. V'yachlu mi pri darkam. So you're going to eat your own fruits, which is a beautiful idea, which means evil creates evil. I'll tell you why you're going to fall down your face. Because you're very... It's not that I'm going to punish you. I often do this and I get in trouble for it. I always say there's no such thing as punishment. It's only consequence. You jump out of a 10-story window, you go splat. If you're a diabetic, you eat sugar, your kidneys go a little bit sooner. And if you break God's law, it's not like God comes out after you and slaps you in the face for doing so. It's a natural result of breaking God's law causes the kind of evil which comes into the world. Consequence rather than punishment. And I think that's what she's saying here. V'yachlumi pre-darkam. You know where we know why they get punished? Because they've created the very evil, the very bad situation. It was their own. I didn't make it. You made it. You just ate your own fruits. There's an expression like that. There's an American expression like that also. The fruits of your own... What's that? fruits of your own labor, but that's a positive sense, but here maybe in the negative sense. Oh, that's nice also, the author. But here it's almost physical. You've literally created, by doing an aveir, by not listening to God, you've literally created a crack that to step into, which is a beautiful idea. You have built your own towers and you eat those towers. And now this is beautiful. Your self-satisfaction. Mishuvat means the way you feel all at rest. You thought you were so perfect. Kimshuvat p'taim, the satisfaction of fools, is what kills you. Because you didn't realize. You thought you were so okay. V'shalvat k'silim t'abeim, and the very satisfaction of fools destroys them. V'shomea li, but somebody who listens to me will dwell securely. V'shanam mipachad ra'at. This is not God speaking. It's not God speaking. It's not Shlomo speaking. It's wisdom speaking. The question is, what's wisdom? And for that, you have to do the first nine chapters in Mishlei, which focus only on wisdom. The nine chapters of Mishlei, the first nine, are really a separate book. After that, it says in chapter 10, it says, Ve'ela od Mishlei Shlomo. And it's a combined book which talks about what is wisdom. And by the way, we have Kimi Tzion Teitzei Torah Devar Hashem Yushalayim. So, Eitz Chayim L'macha Zikim Ba V'tomcheh Mu'ushar. So you think, of course, that that's what? That's the Torah. But it's not. Take a look at Mishlei. It's wisdom. Eitz Chayim Hi L'macha Zikim Ba V'tomcheh Mu'ushar. And that shouldn't be a problem, because the Torah contains all wisdom. But actually, what Mishlei is saying, when it says, Eitz Chayim Hi L'macha Zikim Ba V'tomcheh Mu'ushar, it's a tree of life to those who grab it. It's not a Torah that Mishlei is talking about. It's wisdom. Which means the Torah is simply a method for acquisition of wisdom. It's the wisdom which is the key. Now, if you take a look, if we go back, and I'm spending perhaps a little bit too much time on this, and I hope it's a quarter to 10 and not a quarter to 11. Emor lechokhma achoti atu moda levina tikra l'shmorecha miyusha zara. Now it makes sense. Now we have, tell wisdom, who we've met already, because this is chapter 2 on the left-hand side, that you are my sister, and reject the Isha Zara. But if the woman that you're supposed to hang with, if it's supposed to be your sister, and obviously sister here doesn't mean sister, it means your lover, like in Shir HaShirim, which I'm going to get to, then if wisdom is the woman that you're supposed to spend your time with and listen to, then who is the Isha Zara that Mishlei was talking about? What's that? Not the Ksilim. I think you're going in the right direction. Anti-wisdom. I don't know, what is anti-wisdom called? Rejection of wisdom. Self-induced ignorance. It's not just ignorance. Somebody who's in a room and never hears wisdom, mamash, if you're born in a bubble and you really don't hear anything. But intentional walking away from the voices that you hear, which tell you to do the right thing. And now if you read these sections, her legs descend death. Sure, that could be talking about relationship between a man and a woman. But what it's also talking about is walking after a path. That should remind you of Tehillim. Ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach ba'atzar resha'im, uv'derech hata'im lo amad uv'moshav leitzim, which we had here, lo yashav, kim b'torat adonai chavtzo b'torat o'yam amalayla. Now here, the metaphor was never translated directly, although it was at the end. And since Mishlei starts off with a metaphorizing of the good woman with chachma, then ostensibly, once one gets that, one should recognize that the Isha Zara that you sleep with, and she seduces you with her tongue. Sure, it could also be talking about, and this gets back to the idea of what we discussed last week. The metaphor is beautiful because not only does it have multiple reference, it also has a beautiful literal meaning. It's great advice not to sleep with somebody else's wife, and when the husband comes home, you can pay him $1,000 and you're still dead. She will take you down. Don't follow her beauty. That's a great piece of advice, but if that's all it was, then Shir HaShirim would be shallow, and many people think Mishlei would be shallow. But once we're introduced to the idea of the metaphor, not only is it giving good advice about love, it's telling you all kinds of things about anti-wisdom. Oh, it drips with honey. It sounds really good. Or to quote Yoda, the dark side is not more powerful, just quicker and more seductive. Right? It's quicker and more seductive. And that's where you get pulled in. And the metaphor of the woman allows you to think about evil not as some kind of abstract idea, or anti-wisdom not as some abstract idea, but of something that we know and we're familiar with. Desire, lust of a physical woman. And what Shlomo HaMelech is saying by creating this metaphor is saying, when you want to, I don't know, eat lobster cantonese. I don't mean to take, you know, ridiculous or small items or follow. And I'm not chas v'shalom here to mention any avera, so I'll just leave as it is. When one rejects wisdom, one is seduced by the easiness and the seductivity and the beauty of being able to do whatever you want. And that's a powerful, powerful idea that only by metaphorizing it do you get, in my opinion. However, if you didn't have the left-hand column, you would think that Mishlei was life was essentially marriage advice. That's what it is, because there's no reference given. And the reason why I wanted to mention that before we get back into Shira Shirim, I think we'll take a break. I'll do just the last two sections that are at the bottom of the page. But into my mind, by recognizing that these parts of Mishlei are without reference, that you only have metaphor. Now there is a reference, but it's in different chapters. You have to understand the whole nine chapters to understand that the prostitute here, not really the prostitute, but the woman who sells herself for money, or the woman who likes to sleep around, is not a real woman, but she is a personification of anti-wisdom, even though there's no reference. So that makes it easier to understand that Shira Shirim, with the relationship, the very physical, intimate, and in many cases sexual relationship between the lover and the beloved, is also, can certainly contain the referent behind it. Can certainly contain it, especially when some of the words are similar. So now I go back to Nofet Titofna Sifkote Zara. So the question is, which was written first? Which was borrowing from the other? I don't care. According to Chazal, it was Kohelet that was written at the end. Mishlei was written in the middle of Shlomo's life, and Shira Shirim was written when he was a young man. The Meiri goes exactly the opposite. He thinks that Shira Shirim, since Kodesh Kadashim, like Rabbi Akiva said, and he realizes that it's just metaphor, and that the sexual nature of it is simply hiding the most deepest, intimate relationship between God and man, that was written. So says the Meiri. If you open up the Meiri, it's a beautiful parish on Mishlei. He says it was Shira Shirim that was written last. I don't care which one was written first, written last. I don't care. I don't even care that Mishlei wasn't written by Shlomo Melech. Mishlei, according to Chazal, and according to Mishlei itself, take a look in chapter 25, was written by Chizkiyahu HaMelech, based on work that Shlomo had done. But Shlomo's stuff was either all written or lost in paper. It wasn't until Chizkiyahu gathered together and put it in book form. And that's not a heretical type of thing. It says that Beferish in the Gemara, and it says it, in fact, in chapter 25 of Mishlei. These are the Mishalim of Shlomo that Chizkiyahu and his Sanhedrin, essentially, his Siyota, put together. I don't care which book was written first, which Mishalim was written first. But what I do know is one was borrowing from the other. You follow? So therefore, if you say Shira Shirim came last, that I take this siftotayich notfot mor, the lips are dripping with honey, and I'm using that clearly religious metaphor in my book about the love between a man and a woman. Or I'm Mishlei, and I'm going back to Sefer Shira Shirim, and I'm taking that siftotayich notfot mor, which is a very beautiful and complimentary idea, and said, wait just a second. I know that I wrote in Shira Shirim that the lips dripping, kinofa titofta siftotayach, is a beautiful idea, but there's also a negative side to that kind of communication that a woman could have with a man, or that God could have with Bnei Yisrael. But either way, if it's clearly a metaphor that represents a referent of wisdom or non-wisdom in Mishlei, then it's quite clear that the same words that are duplicated can represent a metaphor which means something much deeper in Shir Shir. Again, ultimately, you cannot prove Shira Shirim is anything but a love story. But this is one also, to my mind, a very, very strong proof that Mishlei that Shira Shirim is a very holy book containing behind it incredibly deep ideas which could not be expressed had they not been metaphorized between the love between a man and a woman. Just to take a, we'll go for a break soon, just to read to you a little bit of a little bit more to show you the relationship between Shira Shirim and Mishlei. So here we have, anybody recognize Kamu Baner V'Yashua Ba'ala V'Yahala Rabot Banot Asuchayel V'Atalit? So that's, of course, Eshechayel, which is the last chapter of Mishlei. If you open up, which not everybody knows, but it's there. If you open up the last chapter of Mishlei, there it is in chapter 25? Chapter 31, thank you. Is the last chapter. And it says Kamu Baner V'Yashua Ba'ala V'Yahala, which means now you have to wonder. Is Eshechayil about an Eshechayil? You follow what I'm saying? If the Isha Zara is not an Isha Zara, and Chochmot is not some woman walking around the streets telling people how to behave, that is an Eshet Chayil, something much deeper than an Eshet Chayil. Who does it represent? Because it is Sefer Mishle. It's in the book of metaphors, the assumption is, because it's a metaphor. Ah, but that shouldn't bother you. Because the beauty of a metaphor is it means things. Let's go back to what Rashi said. Shtayim diber Elohim, echad diber Elohim, v'shtayim zu shamati. God speaks one thing and I hear two things. So it's not only a passage about the relationship of a husband and wife, of how a woman, how a wife takes care of her home and her children, but it also exists on a multiple level. Which is the more important one? Do I have to choose? Do I have to decide whether Mishle is giving me good advice about how not to sleep around, or whether it's telling me about wisdom? Echad diber Elohim, God speaks once and two things I hear. But if you take a look now at Shir HaShirim, Achat hi yonati tamati, you are individual, you are singular, my dove, my pure one. Achat hi li'ima, you are, nobody was like you to your mother. That is, when your mother gave birth to you, she produced something like nobody else. Barahi li'ola d'ta, you are pure to your to the woman who created you. Ra'ua vanot v'yashiruha, daughters, women see you and they praise you. Malachot u'filakshim, princesses and filakshim and concubines praise you. Do you see the language? It's the same as in, as in Mishle. So here another indication of the holiness of the depth of the book and the connection between the two books. And fortunately, because Mishle does let us on to its secrets, so I think it gives us a little help on letting us on to its secrets in Shir HaShirim as well. Anyway, we'll take take a 5-minute break, do you think, or a little more, and then whatever anybody convenes. And then what we'll do is what's that? Now with the five, and then we'll simply do some nice readings in Shir HaShirim, and I'll show you some really nice flows. I'm going to focus on the poetry of Shir HaShirim, and the metaphor I will leave you up to you to demetaphorize, because obviously my idea of what the reference is may not be somebody else's, and not only that, I may not have the best one. What's that? They can live together. That's right. That's right. Absolutely.